Shakyamuni says upon awakening, I and all beings of the great earth together attain the way. All beings are the wisdom and perfection of Buddha. All beings. See? This moment universe manifests perfectly this that we are, this life-death that we are. Except that we have difficulties with this universe manifesting so or so or so. And then make trouble for ourselves and others. There's a nice koan. Hogen. I don't remember Hogen's Chinese name. Anyway, Hogen, 9th, 10th century Chan master, pointed to the blinds, like I pointed to the window. Two disciples went over and rolled up the blinds. He said, one has it, one doesn't, or translated variously, one right, one wrong. Even more can be translated, one good, one bad. Is good better? Is bad worse? See? He was pointing it directly. Good perfectly manifest this true nature universe that we are. Bad perfectly manifests this true nature universe that we are. Perfectly. That true nature that we are being sick, true nature that we are being strong, true nature that we are making mistake, spilling, breaking, true nature that we are winning awards, true nature that we, meaning this whole universe, is. This whole universe, if I say it, non-self universe, ongoing change universe, joyous universe, loving universe, universe that wisely manifests the emptiness of cause and effect perfectly, except that we make difficulties not out of quote good or bad intentions. Doesn't make a difference. One good, one bad. One right, one wrong. But out of not seeing what's so, there's a nice set of verses. I know I've talked about them before, and some of you have talked about them, so some of you are familiar with them. It's attributed to the third ancestor of the Zen school in China, known as Sengtsan, and it's titled Shinshin Ming, or translated variously, believing in mind, faith in mind, or trust in mind. So I'd like to cite a few verses from it to encourage and clarify our life together. See, really nothing is needed. My saying anything is just putting snow on top of snow. No need for it. Because your life as it is the perfect manifestation of this universe, Buddha nature. I don't even have to use such a stinky word like Buddha nature. Is the perfect manifestation of the whole universe. So I won't read these verses line by line, but I'll pick up different lines. So we'll skip around. And if you want, it's freely available in all sorts of places, various translations. It's nice to go back to it, as long as we see it for what it is. What it is an encouragement and description of our life, an encouragement to live our life as it truly is. Then, no problems. Rolling up being wrong, no problems. Rolling up being right, no problem. If you want to see truth manifest, I'll say it, if you want your life to manifest the truth that your life is, not thinking in terms of favorable and unfavorable. To be caught in this battle of favorable and unfavorable. I like the way he, or at least this translator, uses the word caught in this battle of favorable and unfavorable. This is the sickness of, this says mind, but mind, body, being. See? Caught in the battle of favorable and unfavorable. You could use other words for that, like, dislike, good, bad, and all the variations on those. See, if we see ourselves manifesting or subtitling, as we were saying yesterday, or commenting on circumstances and behavior with favorable, unfavorable, we know we're making difficulties. We know there's practice effort needed. But we need to be clear on what the practice effort is. As long as you, or when you miss this key point, any attempt to calm thoughts will only be a waste of time. Any attempt to calm body, mind, rather than, I'll say, experiencing this moment as is, but rather any attempt to dualize our life and do something to change rather than experiencing will be a waste of time, because true accomplishment is like vast empty space without any lack or excess. In other words, this perfect way that we are can't have lack or excess, because we are this perfect way. We can be one wrong, because we are nothing but manifesting this whole universe. We can be one right. Just grasping and rejecting leads us to be out of accord with the ultimate. See? Out of accord with our own life. I like that phrase. I think that says it very clearly. We are what we are, and yet we remove ourselves. We get out of accord, out of coordination with, out of sync with what we are, despite the fact that we are this. He is several centuries earlier. No, let me see. Maybe two centuries. Four or five generations in Zen lineage earlier than Matsu, who we quoted several, or who I quoted several days ago. But he has a similar phrase: no need to seek after truth, only let go of biased views. Don't get stuck with dualistic views, and don't pursue them. Otherwise, if you affirm or reject the true mind nature of life, is lost in confusion. You remember Matsu said something very similar, except we translate it: no need to search for the truth, only don't defile it. Defile letting go of biased views. Different ways of saying it, and of course it's different ways of translating the Chinese. So if I went and looked at the Chinese word that he's using here, for that's this translator is translating as biased views, and looked at the Chinese word for defile, and then we might even see even more similarity. But it's fine. I like to use different translations, because sometimes, for whatever reason, each of us individually can hear with some words and miss it with other words. Some words, because of our, if I say, karmic cause and effect, because of our habits of mind, some words are just the words for us that enable us to see, oh, this is what I need. This is what clarifies. That's all it is. It's a matter of something said, heard, grasped. You could even use a 60s word, groped. I think that's a 60s word. That we get it. Dogen says it. Forget about 60s. Dogen says, you grasp it and know for yourself if it's hot or cold. That's what it is. That's what this is. So Dogen was a number of centuries before the 60s and said the same. See? Knowing for yourself if it's hot or cold. So this is what we're talking about. This in a way, I've talked about this for the past few weeks when I talked about not to. In fact, this is what always we're talking about, one way or another, one piece or another. I shouldn't say talking about, I should say expressing as, because that's the only point of talking. No need for me to say anything up here, because you don't need to get more information. What we only need is to clarify our own life practice. And we all start off with the perfection of truth that we are, the perfection of the whole universe that is our life, not some me inside this bag of skin and bones. As soon as we go there, we're in trouble. As soon as we go there, Dogen reminds us, forget self. Then awaken as the whole universe. The whole universe is who you are, always. Not because you've done something special, not because you are someone special, because everyone you encounter is your whole universe life. The realm of Dharma is in true suchness, where there's no self or other. Now, we could all explain all the reasons there are self and other, and no problem using word self, no problem using word other, and yet in the way fundamentally there is no, if I spell it out, fixed, permanent, separate self. Not yours, mine, or anyone's, and not in any one thing, being that you encounter from morning to night. And it's only holding to that that creates trouble for us and others. If you want to be in harmony with it, just avoid duality. Without duality, all beings are equal, and there is none that is not fully embraced. Fully embraced. See, that's our practice. Even if we don't understand any of this or agree with it, if we fully embrace every being circumstance that we encounter, fully embrace doesn't require you to put your arms around them, but fully embrace the circumstance, condition, beings we encounter, responding as the universe, then it's all clear and taken care of. Everywhere, all those possessing insight all follow the same core teachings. Regarding this, hurry or slowness have no bearing. One flash of thought compromises all time. There is no place where it is not. It is everywhere, right in front of your eyes. Once the delusion of separation is overcome, the extremely small is no different from the big, big no different from small. Once you no longer only see boundaries and surfaces, once you no longer only see self and other, or see duality, He ends this poem with several, or these verses, well, I suppose it's a poem. One, not other than all things. All things, not other than one. This is a fundamental point, because we tend to get stuck on one side of this or another. If you see it all in the same way, what worry could there be that the end would not be reached? The truthful mind, or truthful mind, heart, being, or the true nature that we are, is beyond duality. Truthfulness, mind, being are not two. Nevertheless, here words and speech are ended. No past, future, present. So, I've spoken plenty. Sang-san has hopefully clarified a little more for us. So maybe we could explore this together in our practice. If you need to change your positions, please feel free to. As I said, this is a much longer and richer set of verses, and you're welcome, and I encourage you to look at them individually. There's also lots of commentaries on them. And if you do look at it, I would urge you to look at several different translations. They're all available, not all, many of them are available easily online. And by looking at several different translations in English or in different languages, if you read in different languages, you can get a richer flavor and maybe words that would resonate in one version are not missed if you're looking at another version, or words that don't resonate because of the different version might resonate and clarify and reveal. And what are they revealing? They're revealing this universe that reveals itself every moment. If it doesn't reveal itself when you open your eyes, or even before you open your eyes, if it doesn't reveal itself when you walk down the street or walk into a store or drive down the highway, then there's an opportunity to look at what duality are you holding to? What self and other are you imposing on this moment? Okay. Yes?
I had a long exchange with my very intelligent brother, Bob. And I couldn't begin to paraphrase him. But he said that Zen or Buddhism pathologizes self-identity unnecessarily, and secondly, that this belief that everything in the world is just as it should be leads to kind of an apathetic state, which excuses you from ethical...
Stop for a second. You're adding more and more categories, so let's stop with just those two. Which are a whole host of ideas. Yes, self-centeredness is pathology when we hold on to it, if we attach to it. Pathology, not because it's bad, but as I said yesterday, it's simple cause and effect. If I let go of that, it falls. If I hold on to self, it causes stress, harm, and suffering. You don't agree? Look out in the world. Look at your own life. Look at your own life. If it doesn't, if it's not so, fine. If you look at others' life and you don't see that it's so, fine. Then throw it away. The point of practice is to enable us, if I say it in this simple way, to live our life joyfully, openly, lovingly. And the hindrance, if I say it that way, or the defilement, or what goes off in biased views, is when we hold to self-centeredness or duality. It's the cause and effect. If you don't see it, if you don't agree, fine. We don't say that you need to do that, but I say, look at what happens when that occurs. So, see, it's people who read philosophy but don't sit and practice, don't think about it in word conceptual terms. Buddhism's words are only encouragements and enticements to practice. They're not where it's at. You don't have to hold to any of the words. I say it often. Anything I say doesn't resonate, let it go. It's gone anyway. It's in being present, in sitting down. If you want to say sitting upright, fine. There's lots of other practices, but that we discover what's so. Now, the second word, the second set of statements he made are again misunderstanding of what. See, we tend, he and most people trying to understand it are already approaching it from a dualistic point of view. So the whole idea of perfection doesn't understand what perfection means. Perfection means that, I'll use this again, when I let go, it perfectly manifests the universe because gravity and force and atoms and electrons result in this falling. It's the perfect manifestation of the forces of cause and effect. That's the point. It's neither good nor bad that it falls. It simply is the result of cause and effect. That's what it's about. As Suzuki Roshi liked to say, and I'll use that as an answer to your brother, he said, you're perfect as you are, and you could use improvement. Or you could use some improvement. See, so we have to be clear on what perfection means. Perfection means that when there's storms and lots of rain, there's floods. When there's flooding, some houses collapse, some people drown. Now, the problem for us, especially us thinkers who want to understand all this, is that we only see a little piece of cause and effect, and we think that we need to be able to see all the causes. And the truth that even modern science shows us is how few of the causes we really see, whether in something even just as simple as human beings' condition and our health. We see little bits. You know, our body is really home to thousands and millions of bacteria and germs and viruses of all sorts, all the time. And some of them work in some ways and that we could describe, and most of them work in ways that we cannot describe and cannot understand. That's just this so-called body. And yet, sometimes this body is healthy and sometimes it's sick. Sometimes some things happen. So, that's what I would say simply to him.
If I could follow up just a little bit.
Uh-huh.
I'll try to... I'm not as intellectual as him, and I haven't studied philosophy, Buddhist philosophy, like he has. Somebody like a paradigm of evil, like Adolf Hitler, what if Hitler was allowed to go on because I sat there and zinned out and said, you know, Hitler is here appearing and it's just a temporary form and it's all...
No. But that's nonsense. What kind of... That's such a...
That happened in Japan, as he points out.
No.
Culture...
Just the opposite happened.
They allowed a lot of things to go on in their culture and turned a blind eye.
No, just the opposite. There was greed, anger, there was nationalism, and there was xenophobia, and there was self-centeredness that led to all sorts of terrible behavior. That's why we start with all... Humans are subject to this. That's why yesterday I talked about it. Beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance. Born of our body, mind, and thought. Or body, mouth, and thought. In other words, we humans, that's what Buddha says. Because of delusion and attachment, we don't realize what we are, and we suffer. We cause harm. See, this idea, you zen out, that's such a misreading of the reality of practice and the reality of what our life is and the reality of the Buddha's teaching, that I don't say that you can't practice and still get self-centered and still do all sorts of horrible things, because people do. Why? Because of self-centered greed, anger, and ignorance or delusion. But the fundamental point isn't about philosophy. The fundamental point is being open and loving in your functioning of manifesting the universe from morning to night. From morning to night. If I use the word, the bodhisattva ideal is that everyone you encounter is nothing but your life Buddha, that you manifest open, loving response to.
So how could I say there's Hitler here in all his...
No. Don't be theoretical.
But how could I see him as a Buddha and then still act to oppose him? How could I...
Just the way you said it. I've talked about it many times. I worked in prisons, and part of my practice, I saw people when they first had committed the crimes and were arrested also. And part of my practice was to see the bodhisattva in front of me, who at the same time had just killed someone, and to do what I had to do to enable... This was before they were adjudicated. In other words, they had just been arrested, or a few days, sometimes week before, and I was evaluating them as part of that process with the judges. Part of the process was seeing them as they are, and of course that means seeing the fact that they manifested violence and needed certain things needed to be done to, if I use the general words, to protect the public, to protect them even. Now, I was doing it from a certain perspective, but one thing doesn't exclude the other. It doesn't even exclude, if I'll say it, you know, if it need be, maybe they need to be arrested, locked up for the rest of their life. I had no problems with that. And, you know, I'm not going to argue other issues about what's going to be done to people. But, see, this is the either-or duality thinking that fails to see that when we sit zazen, we're not sitting by ourselves. If you're just sitting in your body, then that much you're blinding yourself in your practice. When you're sitting with the whole universe. If it's not so, then notice the self-centeredness there and practice effort appropriately, because experiencing isn't inside as opposed to outside. If it is, then you're not practice. On the level of philosophizing and intellectualizing, there's no end, and it doesn't get you anywhere, which is why Zen Buddha Dharma is not about philosophizing. Even the word he used, Buddhist philosophy, is really nonsense. It's a creation of maybe 19th, 20th, 21st century Western thinking. And then, you know, Japanese aping of the Western, and Indian and Southeast Asia aping of Western in order to try to be that, and then they create this thing called Buddhist philosophy. If you even look at traditional what's called Buddhist philosophers like Nagarjuna, Mula Madhyamaka Karaka, verses on the middle way, which is 5th, 6th century India, let's say, which is considered one of the high points of what the Western is called Buddhist philosophy. You see, it's all about practice. It's not about theory. And the same with lots of the others. So, I invite you to invite your brother to look at something simple and straightforward, whether Joko, Suzuki Roshi, or anything else. There's lots available. But practice isn't theory. None of us, none of you need any theory. We all can practice together, sit together, because we are all being manifesting this universe that we are. So let's look in that direction and clarify that direction, because that's what's valuable. How you will respond to your brother is a matter of what you can see, that what is skillful, without getting entangled in what is not skillful. See, that's Hogen, one right, one wrong. Soon as we philosophize about that, we're endlessly in trouble. As soon as we dualize about that, we fail to see. There's another. No, that's enough. I don't want to bring up another cone. There's too many to bring up. So I'll stop here. Unfortunately, my translation isn't available online. This is from a friend of mine who at the university, and it's an adaptation of a Chinese translation by someone named Lok Sang Ho at Lingnan University. This was written in early Tang, but it might even be Sui dynasty. I think it's Tang. So the Chinese has to be translated into modern Chinese for modern Chinese to get it. But anyway, so this was a translation which he then, Alexander Meyer, worked on putting it into an English. But there's lots of English versions to see, and you could just compare them. They're not,
well,
but not
what
that,
is that
different.
The one that we used to do for readings here?
I don't remember who that's by. It's fine. If you have that, look at that one. That's a good one to start. It's essentially a page and a half. It's more here in the my version because I have the Chinese as well as the English. And I like that because then I could see this Chinese characters that are being translated in certain ways, and I know what some of the characters enough to be able to see alternative ways to phrase it, which helps me to express it as best I can.
I can't remember if it was the one that we used to read or if it's another one, but it's on the second page and it's sort of close to the bottom, and it there's a line that's something like, to realize the way is to be without anxiety about non-perfection.
Yeah,
something that, like that.
That sounds good.
Yeah.
Let's see if I could. I mean, after all, what is perfection except our idea of good and bad, or what is lacking and what isn't? So, see, that's a nice. See, in a way, Dika used that word also when citing his brother about perfection, and we tend to dualize perfection, whereas when we talk about perfection in practice, meaning we use the word to mean that everything perfectly manifests the forces of cause and effect, which are constantly changing, which is the ongoing universe as it is. If you want to, you could even look at it from a scientific physicist point of view or a quantum point of view as the nature of this universe and this earth is manifesting the cause and effect of the forces of all sorts, some that we know, a few that we know, and most that they call dark matter and dark energy, which make up 80-90% that we don't know. It's shocking to say 80-90% of the forces and the matter of the universe we don't know. We just have hints that it's there. And yet, that's what we're perfectly manifesting. All sorts of things can occur as a result of those. And we can have all sorts of complicated explanations based on the little bit that we do know, and think that our explanations make sense until something else occurs. See, this is the other point that he makes. We can't understand this with mind. It's not about understanding. As I said yesterday, understanding is fine, but it's the booby prize. Insight is the booby prize. It's fine, it's useful, sometimes it makes us feel good, but it's the booby prize because it doesn't enable us, it doesn't support us, it doesn't nurture living the life that we are. It doesn't nurture being joyous and loving and open, or I'd use the word compassionate. That's what the Buddha's teaching is about, not about anything else. It's not about theories. There's somewhere where the Buddha holds up a handful of leaves and he asks his disciples, you know, he's in the forest teaching somewhere in a grove or and says, are these leaves that are in my hand more or less than the leaves in this forest? And of course, what do his disciples say? Okay, they're less. In a similar way, and I'm of course condensing it, in a similar way, what I've taught and encouraged you in practice is like these leaves. They're just a little bit of what's so, of my realization, of the what realization is. It's what's useful and skillful to enable us to practice and to live the life that we are, to, let us say, relieve suffering and harm. It doesn't mean that all the rest isn't there, or even all the rest can't be tasted and appreciated, but it's not what's important and valuable. If you want, you could look it up somewhere on Google, or and you could find the original source in which sutra this is. But so that's the point. Yeah, sure.
Does it seem as though that any kind of understanding of theoretical Buddhism, as a philosophy or whatever, you study it, you look at all the points, it doesn't seem to affect behavior unless you actually grasp what it is.
Well, it there's many ways to grasp it, and you can study, if your study is the kind of study where you grasp it and it manifests it in your practice life or in your life, that's great. I don't say don't study. I say see study as what it is, as a support, maybe a skillful means to enable you to practice your life, which means to manifest who and what you are. And your life isn't about you. Your life isn't about you. As long as we think our life is about ourselves, we're in trouble. If I remember, Joko said something like that sometime, somewhere, or someone else. Doesn't matter who said it.
I think it was you.
She said, "Your life is none of your other people's lives are my business. Your life is none of your business."
Okay.
You said it yesterday, the day before. No,
okay.
Before you said.
No, I don't. I do my best not to remember what I said. Otherwise, I couldn't speak. So yeah. When we practice, whether it's when we're sitting or walking or eating, or when you're taking a walk during a break, or when in other times you're at, as I said, you're at the grocery store, at work, or talking to a friend or family, that's your practice realm of manifesting the universe right there. The manifesting non-duality, or not two. Not to. That's the whole of this practice. Being the truthful mind beyond duality. And manifesting that. Not because you thought it out, but because it's how you live, what your life is. And you're able to do it because you are that. See, we're able to practice because we are all Buddhas. All Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. That's why we're able to practice. And that's why all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas that you encounter are able to encounter you. And you're able to encounter them. Doesn't matter whether they know it or not. Anyway, there was someone whose hand was up who I missed. If not, that's fine. Okay, last one. I'm almost reaching my limit. It's okay, you're fine. I'm the one who's talking too much.
I just thought I'm not sure how I can put this, but it's sort of like the difference between people who see and people who understand. then the behavior will be different for those people, I would think. I mean, you know, people who see the truth and people who just understand the truth is different.
Well,
I mean, the behavior doesn't follow, you know, I mean, I'm not sure I'm very clear.
Well, let me say it a little differently. And even the extent that we see doesn't mean we can actualize, because cause and effect reactive habits arise seemingly naturally, seemingly automatically, seemingly being ours and yet causing difficulties, despite the fact that we see this isn't skillful. Something happens and we react without, quote, knowing that we're doing it, yet knowing that we're doing it, and yet causing harm. Just like you might say, well, I'm not going to say that to him again, and then something happens and then you say it. We all know this. See, that's reactive habits. That's what we were talking about yesterday. Beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance, or self-centered attachments that keep arising, which is why when that arises, it's important for us to, in being present, to notice it and make what's skillful and appropriate effort right there. It's not about adding blame. It's not about even judging, oh, I didn't see it clearly enough. It's about seeing is just a little piece of actualizing. Actualizing in our life what's so in our life. See, we're able to actualize the life that we are because we are so. And yet, beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance, or simply say beginningless self-centeredness, occurs as a result of cause and effect, manifests, and yet we have the opportunity this moment, just this moment, to make the effort to release it or hold on to it, to practice skillfully with it, or to have lots of theories but continue. As Gikai was saying, people can call themselves Buddhist and then continue to do terrible things. People can call themselves all sorts of things, doesn't matter, and then do terrible things. Terrible in the sense of harmful, in the sense of creating stress and suffering, or worse. And we have examples of wars. See, it's easy to pick on wars a long time ago, like, you know, World War II and Germany and Japan and China, etc. But we don't have to go so far.
Myanmar.
We could go last week in Nigeria. You could go, you know, 3 weeks ago and yesterday in Syria. And you can talk about, you know, what's going on in you know, Afghanistan and lots of other places. We've been in session. Who knows what's happened in these few days? But us humans, you know, rev ourselves up to do these sorts of things out of beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance, and all the concomitant activities and variations that we build on that. This was the last one, but I'll give you, as long as it's a short one. Well, make it short.
No, but what I'm hearing and responding to, or reacting to, probably is that, I mean, Buddhism has its own flavor, but I mean, I'm thinking, and you're talking about intellectualizing, and certainly Jews read the Talmud and lead some very wonderful lives.
Yeah, but
it's a different.
It's another form of practice, but reading the Talmud isn't about thinking about it, it's about becoming one with it and manifesting mm-hmm. it in your life. Mm-hmm. I can say a little about Jewish tradition, but I can't talk about other traditions. So, but, you know, I don't, please don't hear me, and I don't think I did, denigrating other traditions of practice. There are, this isn't ours because we're Buddhists, this is ours because we're human, because we're beings in this universe. There, you don't need any names or particular forms. It's a matter of self-centeredness or letting go of self, forgetting self, living the life of the universe that we are. Then, all sorts of ways to do this. The simplest way is breathe this moment, bow to everyone you meet, embrace every circumstance, and be skillfully with circumstances and conditions, and notice when self in all the various form arises for you. Don't worry about others. Take care of your practice and let others take care of their practice. So, thank you.
Copyright Elihu Genmyo Smith.